this is a republic if you can keep it, with former Republican Party Executive Director Jeff Timmer and former Democratic Party Chairman Mark Brewer.
I'm Mark Brewer. Welcome to the pre-criminal referrals edition of A Republic If You Can Keep It. I'm coming up for air after still another long day of recounting, which I've been at for almost 2 weeks. And the futility of the statewide recounts for proposals 2 and 3 are being highlighted by a Michigan Supreme Court ruling, a federal appeals court ruling in Colorado, both bearing the big lie and the attorneys promoting it.
I'm Jeff Timmer. I'm coming to you this week from Nashville, where leaders of the Lincoln Project are holding our post-midterm victory lap and planning for 2023 and 2024. Stay tuned for that. Mark, let's begin. We talked with you last week about what was going on with the recounts. Another week, it's kind of the same thing. Here we are. Tell us what's going on, what these kooks are up to, and what could be done in the future to prevent ourselves from being in this position?
Right. Well, thanks, Jeff. Yeah, just to recap. The so-called Election Integrity Fund, which is none of those things, petitioned for recounts, partial recounts of proposals 2 and 3. They didn't even ask for enough precincts or votes, Jeff, to overturn the results. Instead, and they were very clear about this, they hoped to use this as some launching pad to do investigations. They were sternly warned by the Board of Canvassers when the board allowed them to go forward a little over almost 2 weeks ago now. That's not what they're supposed to do. But we're now in week 2 of these recounts, and I think hopefully they'll wrap up this week. And that is exactly what they attempted to do. I've been supervising a group of volunteer lawyers and challengers around the state who've been monitoring this. I have been at several days of these recounts myself. And it's been the most obnoxious display of behavior I've ever seen, publicly accusing election officials of breaking the law and threatening criminal prosecution, going way beyond what the recount rules call for, which is literally you're recounting the ballots, demanding to see all kinds of election information that is not relevant. It got so bad, and there were disruptions. One of the EIF people was ejected from a site last week, and there were other disruptions. The attorney general issued a warning last week, telling people that disruptions will not be tolerated. Last Friday, the director of elections sent a letter to EIF's attorney telling him that these kind of disruptions and improper behavior would not be tolerated. As far as I can tell, nothing changed despite that warning and despite that letter. It's been a very bad exercise, I think. Actually, the vote totals in favor of 2 and 3 have gone up. Jeff, they haven't gone down. They've gone up. Again, it doesn't make any difference in the long run. But I think it does illustrate that we do need some reform in this area. Look, I'm in favor of recounts. I think they are an important part of the system. But there's got to be some way that you can't ask for this kind of frivolous recount. An abuse of the recount system is exactly what it is, and I hope that the incoming legislature will do something about that. These recounts should wrap up next week in what could be a very tumultuous hearing before the Board of Canvassers, as that board now has to deal with what exactly happened during these 2 weeks. Sorry for the long-winded explanation, my friend, but it's been hours and hours and days of disruption and election denialism run amok.
Yeah, well, I think this is a living example, an ongoing example of what I think is this fantastical notion that Trump's power and influence and position within the Republican Party is diminishing or is lessening. Now, after the 2022 losses, the Republicans are ready to pivot. They are, if Trump disappears from the planet today, this kind of nonsense that he's unleashed will continue. He's the virus has replicated itself now and morphed into the Omicron and Delta variants here, and it's this it really has poisoned the minds of so many. And this is not just some fringe on the Republican side. This is mainstream within the Republican Party. These election deniers, they're convinced that there's something nefarious going on, that there's bamboo fibers that show the ballots came from China and all the other nonsense that we've seen over the last couple of years related to this. And this is just one example, one tedious example, this election denialism. But it is really, I think, demonstrative of the fact that the Republican Party writ large has become anti-democracy, anti-free and fair elections. And this is case in point. This is what we can just expect is normal course of business from Republicans, unless we make it difficult or illegal for them to do these frivolous challenges. And I agree, you know, lawsuits are important, election challenges are important, recounts are important, but there's the opportunity to abuse it needs to be dissuaded and prevented to the extent it's possible to do so. And I hope this example provides the new incoming Democratic majorities in the legislature the impetus to take this up and prevent this kind of nonsensical exercise in wasting a whole bunch of people's time and energy and money, and eroding the public faith in democracy and the faith in the outcome of elections, because that is their goal.
No, I think you're right, Jeff. I don't think we're going to be able to put the genie back in the bottle. I mean, I've been dealing with these people now for 2 weeks at these recount sites, as well as at the Board of Canvassers meeting. And this has taken on a life of its own. I don't hear a word about Trump. I have no doubt that most of these people are Trump supporters. But you're right. This has now taken on a life of its own. And, you know, we're going to continue to see this. These folks are reading the election laws in a way nobody has ever read them in 60 years. And it's just nuts. But they will not be talked out of it. One would think that they would see, oh, yes, the process has integrity and the results aren't changing. But no. And I got to tell you, the local clerks out there, to a person, Republicans as well as Democrats, are really angry about this. They're being put through this. They're being attacked. They regard this as an attack on their own integrity, this recount request and these verbal attacks on them at these sites. They've also told me how they're inundated with FOIA requests from these folks, as well as, again, part of their paranoid pursuit of their conspiracy theories. So, yeah, it's been another bad episode. But I think it will lead to reform. But Jeff, I want to ask you about something. There've been, you know, you and I have talked frequently about the Chatfield scandal. Looks like that's kind of metastasizing, if I can borrow a metaphor. There've been efforts to try to get hold of some of the subpoena related documents, and an assistant attorney general got up in court this week, so we can't do that because there's a lot of folks, some of them who may be innocent, some may be guilty, but there's a lot of people apparently mentioned in those documents. So I want to hear what your take is on that. And apparently now the governor's given her traditional end of the year interviews, and she's talking about the need for ethics reform. So what's going on there, Jeff?
Well, when the Chatfield story broke almost a year ago in January, I said back then that this was going to touch a lot of people. There was a whole lot of people involved in covering up perhaps the sexual abuse he's been accused of. A lot of people would have had to have been involved in the financial abuse, whether it was his campaign or internal Republican abuse or possible abuse of public monies here. There had to have been others involved. And the nuggets of information that have come out over the last year have backed that up. And there are a lot of bricks that have been shat. There are a lot more that will be shat. And there, I think this potential release of these search warrant documents, these subpoena documents, that is apparently, I don't know, requ- required, allowed under Michigan law, but is being temporarily halted because these are unsubstantiated allegations in a lot of cases that implicate the rules of evidence don't necessarily apply to this. This is, some of it is very much hearsay. And so they're taking efforts to protect people's reputation that may have nothing to do with this. But there's a lot of people who are worried around Lansing. A lot of people who know that they were involved, know people who were involved. And this is the kind of thing that that can bring down a lot of people. This is not just a political scandal. This is a deep conspiratorial criminal scandal that appears to be here. The Detroit News, Craig Mauger, especially, hats off to him for the investigative work he's done, showing some of the very strange unsavory, if not illegal, relationships between some in the lobbying community and Chatfield. And I think the governor is completely right. We shouldn't just accept things as the normal course of business, maybe because that's the way they've always been done. This is an opportunity to not only add some teeth to things, because I think that if they didn't, if some of these lobbyists involved, some of these other staff people involved didn't necessarily violate the letter of the law, they've certainly figured out how to skirt the spirit of the law. And I think this is a way to toughen that up, because this is these laws are there to prevent undisclosed money, bribes, things like that from going into the pockets of elected officials. And when you have people living, they say we have market values in homes or apartments owned by lobbying companies or associations or whatnot, and that's never reported or disclosed anywhere along the way. That kind of thing is what lobbying laws are established for, to show the public who's influencing who, and then they can make their decisions on whether or not they should vote for that person or not. And that's why we need to sunlight the laws need to be revised and updated and looked at based on this, because I think that at least the stories that we're hearing about some of these crimes or alleged crimes are going to really shock Lansing and shock the public of Michigan once they're fully reported, once they come out, if there's indictments and trials, which appear likely to happen.
Yeah, no, Jeff, it reminds me of the old adage about the scandal is what's legal, not what's illegal. And, remind our listeners that Michigan has the worst lobbying law in the country in terms of disclosure. I don't say many good things about Ohio, but I have studied their lobbying law, and it's much, much better than ours. And frankly, it would be a model for the kind of reform we need to have here. They do things like ban gifts, just ban them. No gifts from lobbyists or their clients to public officials. Much greater disclosure of what lobbyists are spending across the board, not only directly with a public official, but so-called grassroots lobbying. And there's a lot of this dark money that, as you mentioned, that is involved in this whole process. C4s and others, have become these favorite devices. So, yeah, I hope it's a wake-up call and that the new legislature and the governor can join hands and toughen things up. But there's going to be a lot of resistance from this lobbyist culture in Lansing. I've never been a part of it. Frankly, when I was chair, I stayed away from it. But don't get me wrong, there are fine people, and lobbying is protected under the First Amendment. But we've got to, fix this, because there's obviously a lot of criminal activity going on in the name of so-called lobbying, and that's just gotta stop. It just contributes to this erosion of trust in our government.
Yeah, well, I agree, and I think that what you said there, I think that most people involved in advocacy at the Capitol around Lansing, whether they're multi-client lobbyists, whether they're trade association lobbyists, whether they're interest group lobbyists or, you know, labor union lobbyists, they're good people and they do follow the law. And they're, it's these bad, it's bad apples that, that poison the image and industry. Having experts in legislation and in public policy is not a bad thing. It's an essential thing. And I think even more so in the era of term limits, and we can, you know, talk about term limit reforms is going to be happening in Michigan and how that can coincide with this or maybe has led to some of this. But I think that the good lobbyists in that, I know many, and I'm sure you do too, people I would consider who are upstanding and trustworthy and have integrity and would look at these people and say, you know, they give us all a bad name. I think there's going to be a lot of support from the lobbying community too, because most people, they don't want to, they feel pressure. They feel pressure to act like the bad actors. There's an expectation among some in power in elected office that that everybody's going to be like the bad actors. And I think that these kinds of reforms that are likely coming are going to be welcomed by a lot of the community.
More from Mark and Jeff after these messages on A Republic, If You Can Keep It.
When candidates and government leaders need the facts about their voters, they turn to Practical Political Consulting.
PPC has served political candidates, organizations, campaigns, and businesses for more than 45 years. They work with savvy campaigns to provide the best voter lists available in Michigan, as well as campaign consulting, graphic design, and polling at competitive prices.
Over their storied history, PPC has worked with thousands of campaigns, providing them with, as the New York Times once said, quote, the best lists possible in this competitive state, along with unique and individualized strategy.
They've worked with small campaigns for rural school board, all the way up to occupants of the White House. They are also renowned for their work with ballot initiatives, both for challenges and protections.
Find out more. Go to www.practicalpoliticalconsulting.com or call 517-351-5105.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm whose principals have more than four decades of experience measuring public opinion on federal, state, and local issues, from who's ahead in a race for governor or Congress, to local support for a proposed zoning change.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, state agencies, local governments, and membership organizations across the state. Whether it's measuring voter opinions about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation enjoys public support, Epic MRA has been Michigan's premier go-to pollster for 30 years.
Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Show your support for preserving our republic at the A Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
We haven't talked about the Michigan Democratic Party chair's race. You know, LeVar Barnes obviously did a fabulous job. But so what's going on there, and any new developments in the Republican chair's race?
Let's start with the Michigan Democratic Party, which has been at the epicenter of the calendar change that the DNC is talking about. Could even end up even in a better position. Now, there's a whole lot of, is South Carolina going to be first or not, or who is? And so that and the just the tremendous success that Lavora Barnes has had in that role. I, for one, am a big fan and would love to see her continue. I haven't heard any chatter to that about anybody else looking to do that. I think people are just waiting to see she's earned earned the right to decide if she's going to go for another term or move on. I think she's earned that, and you know, we'll give her the Christmas and New Year's season to make her decision. Whereas the Republican side of things, yeah, I Matt DiPerno to me is still the prohibitive favorite in the race to be Republican Party chair. Tudor Dixon had looked at it, but is out. Pete Hoekstra had dipped his toe into it, even gone down to Mar-a-Lago to beg for Trump's support. He's out. Christina Caramo is in, and now Lena Epstein, she may not be as well known to a lot of people, a lot of our listeners. She was the Republican nominee against Haley Stevens back in 2018 when Dave Trott had vacated a seat that had been held by Republicans forever, probably for at least 100 years, if not longer. I mean, Bill Broomfield held that seat for most of that time, and then Joe Nolenberg after him. But Lena is quietly maybe the craziest of the bunch. And that's pretty hard to do when you're dealing with Matt DiPerno and Christina Caramo as your opponents, to say I'm crazier than she is. But that's kind of Lena's reputation. However, she's trying to position herself as the consensus candidate that can marry together the MAGA and the traditional establishment governing wing of the party, to the extent that that still exists in anything other than memory. I know that Lena has been calling people and getting a kind of a cool reception, because I don't think she might bill herself as the consensus candidate. I don't think too many of the donor class view her as the consensus candidate. They still are waiting for a unicorn to come into this race that can be somebody other than these three kooks who are in it. But again, I said it earlier in this broadcast that this is evidence of the continued Trumpification of the Republican Party. After three straight election defeats in Michigan, some pretty historic, generational, DNA-altering defeats for the Republican Party, their answer is, we need these crazy, flawed, kooky, delusional MAGA candidates to lead the party into more in the future. I guess I'm all for it. I mean, I'm a big Matt DiPerno fan as him chair of the Republican Party, because he seems to be an incompetent ass clown, and I can't think of anybody better to lead the Republican Party. My money is on Matt DiPerno.
Yeah, but it's the same thing seems to be going on at the national level. I mean, I'm reading now that Ron Romney McDaniel is on the verge of a fourth term, when, you know, other than electing Trump in 2016, her term has been a complete disaster for the Republicans. But same thing seems to be playing out there, Jeff. Is that right?
Yeah, well, and Ronna was not the national chair in 16. She was the Michigan chair, right, and kind of backed her way into the position. She was in the right place at the right time. I mean, no one would accuse Ronna of being a great political strategist. Evidence of that is the three solid election defeats under her watch as chair of the RNC. Interesting developments there. It looked like she was headed for maybe an unopposed a fourth term. But there's a RNC member from California who's very MAGA, an election denying attorney from California who's a member of the RNC, who is challenging Ronna now, in addition to the MyPillow guy, Mike Lindell. And Ronna's supporters are circulating a letter that she has more than 100 of the 168 members of the RNC supporting her. My read on that is it's a bunch of bullshit. that she, her support is very tenuous. In the night, there are some serious knives out for Rana, including some very close to Trump. There's a story, I think it was either Politico or some other publication out of Washington Today about the lavish, extravagant spending of the RNC on things like trips and private planes and limousines and makeup and clothes and staff and all kinds of other goodies for Rana and those close to her. And that's the kind of oppo dump that tells me that there's some real, that's an inside job. People with knowledge of this is, that's not the kind of thing that just comes from perusal of FEC reports. That's somebody on the inside who is looking to bring Rana down. And I think the fact that they're out there insisting, they being Rana's team, insisting that they have, you know, this solid support, I think they're doing that to kind of create a smokescreen that their support is stronger than it actually is. When you release names like that, just like a leadership race in a caucus, you know, there might be 50 votes. And when you add up the names of everybody who's claiming support, there's like 110 members of those. And that's kind of what's going on here. So the most probable outcome is Rana hangs on and wins another term. But that is looking a lot dicier today than it was a month ago.
Huh. That's like the old adage. They protest too much, right,
exactly,
Jeff?
The
protesting is actually a sign of weakness on their part. Well, in some good news, I guess, maybe for us, Gary Peters took our advice. I don't know if he was listening to us, but I see that he decided not to take a second term as DSCC chair. You know, we've had him on the program. He's got a tremendous number of assignments. I mean, he's got Homeland Security, he's got cybersecurity, and I think Gary is, you know, in a great spot policy-wise and wants to focus on those important items. I look forward to the opportunity to get him back on the program to talk about his agenda for the next couple of years. But, Gary, we think you did the right thing.
Agreed.
So, Jeff, while Gary took our advice, and, you know, we'll see who ends up heading up the DSCC in the coming cycle, and the Democratic leadership looks pretty settled. Things remain very unsettled for the Republican race to be Speaker of the House. What's going on there?
The Republicans, as many thought would happen, ended up winning a majority in the House in the November elections, or once all the votes were counted. But it's a very slim majority, much smaller than anticipated. They've got 222 seats, just four above that that majority threshold of 218. And there are at least five members of that Republican caucus who say, no way, no how. Under any circumstances, will we ever vote for Kevin McCarthy for Speaker? And if that's true, there's many number of scenarios that could happen. Now, you can't forget Kevin McCarthy ran for Speaker once before when John Boehner resigned. Kevin McCarthy was unopposed in his race for Speaker when John Boehner resigned. Unopposed, and Kevin McCarthy managed to lose. Back then, he could not, wow, at that time, get the Republicans to back him for Speaker. They chose Paul Ryan instead, who wasn't in the race. Now, that's a scenario that could happen here. That with the second in command in the Republican caucus, Steve Scalise from Louisiana, that he's going to give Kevin about exactly, you know, like 1 minute to pull this together, or he's going to step in and, you know, maybe he can pull together the votes. Another name that has emerged is Pat McHenry out of North Carolina, that is kind of a Paul Ryan kind of candidate. He's not in the current House leadership. His name has been talked about. But the what's really interesting here is the idea of it's been since 1855. I was reading an article about this today, that the House can't conduct business until it has a speaker, a presiding officer. And in 1855, there was something like 120 ballots and weeks and weeks and weeks that passed where they had no speaker. They kept trying, somebody's trying to cut deals. There's all this horse trading going on before they could finally do it. And that there's a lot of speculation in Washington and a lot of betting that could be what we're heading toward. If these five or more Republicans stick to their guns, that they're not going to support McCarthy. Well, the Democrats don't have enough votes on their own. They only have 213 seats that they control, 213 votes. But this is where deal making comes in, old style politics. And you've got people like Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, who are as good a deal makers as have ever existed in Washington, who recognize they're not going to be the choice. But the name of Fred Upton, Michigan's own Fred Upton, retiring this year, has been talked about in several serious articles as a consensus candidate that the Democrats could all support with some votes from Republicans. And now that's a almost hard to fathom scenario. The Constitution, the House rules, nothing requires the Speaker to be an actual elected member of the House, or have ever been a member of the House. You know, Donald Trump, some of the MAGAs talked about him being Speaker of the House. So it's not outside the realm of possibility, or at least theoretical possibility, that somebody like Fred Upton could be chosen. That's probably more likely than a current member, a Republican, being that consensus candidate, or some other centrist Democrat. It would certainly be historic and unprecedented if that were to occur. But we've seen many historic and unprecedented things in these last few years, and so nothing would surprise me at this point, including Kevin McCarthy's ineptness and an inability to get support, even when he's running unopposed in his own caucus.
So you're saying a united Democratic caucus with half a dozen Republicans added in, if I do my math right, that gets you to 219, could elect a Speaker of the House.
Yeah, you only need 218. 218 is the magic right. number. So a united Democrats plus yeah. five. Don Bacon, who's a Republican from the 2nd District in Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska, has talked about this possibility and how he would be willing to support. He says he's a McCarthy supporter, but if Kevin can't get the votes, he would support something like this rather than somebody who's more extreme MAGA, more extreme Trump supporter, because that's what the Matt Gaetzes and the Paul Gosars and the Andy Biggs, those they call themselves the ultra MAGAs in the Republican caucus. That's what they want, is one of their own, Jim Jordan. That's just never going to happen. They're not going to get 218 Republicans to support them. It's far more likely that five Republicans say, you know, screw this. I'm done here anyway. I'm going to support this. And then you either beat me in my district in a primary, or I'm going to walk away from this in 2 years, but I'm going to do what's right for the country. There are some who are willing to do that.
Well, so who becomes majority leader under that scenario? Does Akeem Jeffries become majority leader? I mean,
I think all that would be negotiated. It would be fascinating if it were to happen. If McCarthy can't get to that 218 on his first ballot, watch the wheels come off. And if Steve Scalise or this Patrick McHenry, or maybe Elise Stefanik, who was the one who supplanted Liz Cheney in Republican leadership, if they can't quickly, and by quickly, assemble a majority, that 218 on the next ballot, they've got to get McCarthy's vote. Arguably along the way here, it's going to be something to watch. And if it doesn't happen fast, dig in. This is going to look like Belgium in like 1916. Everyone's just going to be in trenches and just coming up and shooting a little bit and then ducking back down.
Who runs this election, Jeff, if you know it? I don't mean to task you with this. I mean, do the Republicans run the election because they're allegedly the majority party? Who runs it?
The House parliamentarian runs the election, and this is not the election of speaker is not a caucus function. McCarthy won that initial vote for leadership, but that only required a majority of his own caucus. He's got to get those 218 public votes for speaker on the floor of the House and the first day they convene. And that's a lot harder, steeper hill for him to climb. And he just doesn't seem to have the juice. I mean, right now it looks like him becoming speaker at best, the best case scenario is 50-50. But which means there's as likely a chance that this descends into just chaos then he would win the election. And so what's likely to happen, or at least they're going to try with these five members who publicly come out and said, never McCarthy, no way. Okay. What's their price? So that's what McCarthy and his allies are trying to figure out right now. And this is, okay, what's going to get them to have an epiphany where they were wrong and they will now support Kevin McCarthy somewhere between now and January 3rd or whenever it is that they convene. But it's going to cost him. And if he wins, you have to recognize that he has had to take his balls and put them in a jar that's held by Marjorie Taylor Greene and those folks. That's who is in control of Kevin McCarthy. Is he will have to have sold every last ounce of integrity and personal cachet that he's ever had to keep that position. This is, if Kevin McCarthy ends up speaker, it is the ultimate power for power's sake over any integrity or principle, because he will have had to give these people exactly what they wanted so that he could call himself speaker, but he will be speaker in name only.
So we may have another spectacle at the Capitol, not a violent one like we had on January 6th. A couple of years ago, but the spectacle of chaos in the United States House of Representatives.
Because of this, Pelosi and McConnell and Schumer are, because McConnell is not part of the brinksmanship cabal, and he doesn't want to play with the debt ceiling. And so they're trying to get something done to pass a continuation of the budget for a year. They passed a short term, like to get us through like the next few days, but they're trying to get this done before the wheels potentially come off because of this very scenario. We could be looking at weeks, months before anything could get done in the House. If we're just sitting there with this gridlock, this could be, there's, aside from the political theater, there's real world implications.
This is very bad.
The markets are going to not react well to this. Foreign actors aren't going to react or have potential to try to exploit us when we're divided. This is just further undermines, I guess, shows how fragile the foundations of American democracy have become.
Well, but again, you're right, Jeff. But again, all thanks to Trump. I mean, Trump set us down this path, and I'm not going to let him off the hook for what may be about to happen in the House.
Yeah, because you're right. He is the central organizing figure. The common denominator in all this dumbfuckery is Donald Trump. But as we said earlier today, if he were to disappear tomorrow, these kinds of forces have been unleashed, and the toothpaste isn't going back in the tube. Well, we're out of time for this week. It's time for me to get back to plotting for 2024.
And I'm headed back to the recounts, hopefully finishing so I can do my Christmas shopping before Christmas.
And with that, if the Republic is still standing, Mark and I will return next week. I'm Jeff Tipper.
And I'm Mark Brewer. Thank you for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on all major podcast sites. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.